Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
So, no need to adjust your sets. Those people watching live on YouTube, just hang where you're at. It'll be about 30 minutes before we get on video. But we're streaming live right here on Global Star Radio Network. Thank you, Global Star. We're also streaming live on BTR. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Now, you know, it's interesting because what do we have? We have key Republican senators coming out against the Senate Republican health care plan today. And their opposition, it appears that it would be enough to defeat the package before a vote. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Michael Lee, and Ron Johnson. But they all said they're not going to vote on the Republican, the Senate Republican plan in its current form. Here's what's going on, and you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Here's what's going on, folks, with respect to this. There is a move right now. The Freedom Caucus people, the people who really want to, in my view anyway, to keep the Republic whole, to save our country, to maintain our country, they are fighting against anything that could lead, will lead to a single-payer system. And rightfully so. A single-payer system will be the final nail in the coffin of this country. We are so close to that right now. This Senate health care bill, if you look at the, and I don't know how many people have even looked at the bill. First of all, oh man, it's complicated. I'll just say this. It's complicated to the extent that they're calling cuts, decreases in the increases. That's how they define cuts. And there's a lot wrong with this. Now, what we need to do, in my view anyway, and I think that I was talking with some people in talk radio across the board here, we need to repeal Obamacare, period. Get the government the hell out of running, get them out of running our insurance. And I've seen the arguments on both sides. I've seen the arguments from the progressives say, well, it's the profiteering from the insurance companies. Oh, come on. Come on.
I think that's part of it.
Yes.
But it's more so under Obamacare than even before.
There you go. Yes, and that's a good point. If you read the bill, and I did not have the chance to read the entirety of the bill, obviously. But that was unveiled earlier today. But from everything I've been able to skim through, and I've got to print this out. It's just, you know, it's going to be a ream of paper. But it's, I shouldn't say a ream. It's a 142-page draft of the Repeal and Replace Health Care Plan titled Better Care Reconciliation Act of 2017. This does eliminate a majority of Obamacare provisions, and the Senate Republicans are having a conniption fit, you know, over this, of course, and, you know, the heads are exploding across the progressive television. But it's interesting because, the senators that were interviewed across the media spectrum today all said, oh, we can have something up next week, but by next week. Who was interviewed that said it's not like a fine wine, it doesn't get better with age? Was that, McConnell? Maybe? I'm not sure. But the bottom line is, this whole thing is a bad idea. It's a bad idea. It is a horrible idea to stay in the insurance business. Chuck Schumer, of course, he took personal offense to this healthcare bill.
Millions will be uninsured. Yeah. People will die.
It's mean. It's mean, I tell you. Yeah, okay. All right.
What did any of us ever do before Obamacare?
Really?
Were there even hospitals before Obamacare? Insurance companies? I mean, did healthcare was the healthcare in this country birthed when Obamacare came on scene? That's what these people act like.
Hey, you've got to pass it to really know what's in it. You can't see, and then that's the other part of it too. This Obamacare, which the affordable, it's interesting. People on the left don't like the use of the phrase Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. Well, yeah. No, Obama owns this, and if the conservative or the Republican Senate owns this, shame on them. And again, this is going to lead to the entire, and folks, please understand this. The entire goal here is for a single payer system, and that is for a full socialistic run of our economy. And we're done. We're done as a constitutional republic.
Well, look in California; they're trying to do this. They estimated on the lower side, the cost would be upwards of $400 billion a year. They don't even have enough money to pay for half of it, yet they're still trying to push it through. It's craziness. And like you, I haven't read through this healthcare bill. And I expected the comments from Schumer and Obama. I don't know if you even saw Obama today.
I tried not to.
He made a comment on it. I'll find where that. I think that was on the Washington Free Beacon. They wrote an article about it, but he came out and was saying the same things like Schumer was saying, and I think Rand Paul. There's a story on the front of Drudge.
I was okay with Rand Paul today. He came out swinging, I like that. You know, I'm more of a political atheist myself as well. All right, I'm a conservative. But anyway, Rand Paul, I was pretty okay with what he was saying today. That it's just this whole thing doesn't go far enough. Just repeal the whole damn thing and get out of the business of healthcare.
That's where you got to start, is by repealing Obamacare. And you know, this is one of the big criticisms that many of the voters have against the Republicans who are in power. As you said, all they have to do is write one sentence down and pass it: the repeal of Obamacare.
Yeah.
And then start from there. But the former President Barack Obama ripped into the newly released Senate Republican Obamacare replacement plan in a Facebook post today, saying the legislation is not a health care bill and it's fundamental meanness. It contains fundamental meanness. This is our former president. Fundamental meanness.
It's mean.
Also, one of the interesting points about this bill, it will defund Planned Parenthood for a year. Obviously, that's not enough, but it would be a start. And Planned Parenthood gave $700,000 to the Joel Ossoff's campaign in Georgia? What are these people doing, taking taxpayer money and giving it to political campaigns?
Well, does that mean we have to tell them that we got $50,000 for operational costs from Planned Parenthood?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's
never got $50,000 in our life. What do you mean?
Well, okay, but it's that's absurd to me. Where they would be donating that much to a campaign? But I saw that, and it's sickening, for sure. But folks, this is big news. I mean, this is what people need to be paying attention now is the healthcare reform. And it should be healthcare repeal the whole doggone thing. You're right, Joe. One sentence would do it. Dismantle the Obama legacy. Make it so that the legacy just is wiped out. And not only wiped out, but prosecute him. Prosecute him. Prosecute Hillary. Prosecute everyone else that needs prosecuted, which is the entirety of the people inside the Beltway, in my view. Anyway, I just throw them all in the back of a paddy wagon, take them away. You can tell my age, right? Joe's looking at me saying, "What's a paddy wagon?" Yeah, remember those old? Never mind. But
I know what a paddy wagon is.
All right, take them away. And now Trump also, and heads are exploding over this. I did not record ex FBI chief Comey. Well, okay, these are the headlines.
Yeah, I didn't pay much attention to that.
You got to look. Well, it does matter. Because, to me, anyway, because when you look at...
He never said he taped them, though, to begin with. He said, you better hope there aren't tapes of our conversation.
Exactly. And then you have to look at what he stated coming out of the box. And I was never comfortable with the phrase fake news. I'm getting okay with calling the way the headlines are structured and the way the stories are written fake news in the mainstream media, because it's misrepresenting what Donald Trump said, and it's misrepresenting what Donald Trump sent via Twitter and his, it's so, but this is, but see, I believe that to me, in this case, when you can see the end result today, where Donald Trump essentially says that President Trump essentially says there's, that he did not record Comey. That's the gist of it. When you consider the testimony by Comey, and I'm sure he was sitting there during the hearings as his lips were moving and his brain was engaged, I'm sure he was thinking in the back of his mind, are there recordings of me?
Oh, yeah. If you remember his testimony, he would wake up in the middle of the night.
Yes.
Sweating, worried, fearful that there was, you know, something else going on, that there could possibly be recordings.
See,
my question would be,
Did that change Comey's
testimony?
Exactly.
Did that keep him from embellishing or exaggerating? Did it have any effect, I guess, is the question. And if
I think it did, the timing of this, the release of this, why did President Donald Trump wait until today to say that, as opposed to why didn't he say that? Why did he say it to begin with, and then why didn't he say that before the hearings? Now that the hearings are Comey with respect to him, now that they're basically over. I think he played Comey. Big time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Big time. But see, somebody could stick a recorder in my office, in the studios, and play it anywhere in a hearing, in a criminal, I would not, it would not affect what I would testify to.
Right.
It would be boring, number one. You'd understand that I'm
boring. It might be more
hilarious, right?
than you'd think, but not in the ways that people might think.
What's that noise? Oh, that's just Doug throwing the pencil container across the office.
It'd be entertaining, to say the least.
But it certainly would not reflect any type of criminality, and I wouldn't stay up nights sweating out, well, geez, did I say this or did I say that? So there is always that with respect to Comey, and I do believe that. Even at that level, and some might say, well, when you're at that level, at that position as the head of the FBI, it still doesn't make sense to me. So I think that President Donald Trump really, really, really did a number on Comey. All right. So those are the headlines. I mean, those are a couple of issues that we need to really kind of keep our eyes on. And, Watch American Thinker, Peter Choka, writing some great articles, by the way. He's a great author, great investigative journalist. I haven't had time. I feel bad. I haven't had time to talk with him off air. Excuse me. And, I've just been really wrapped up. Was that last night I was on the coast?
Yes, it was. Right?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was last night.
Okay. Yeah, I was on Coast to Coast AM last night. I don't know. That was like 18 hours ago, right?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, about the we were talking about the Flint, Michigan case. The police officer in Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
The airport.
There's a headline today: FBI no wider plot suspected in Michigan airport stabbing. Apparently they're saying that this was The man from Tunisia, who was a Canadian citizen, who shouted Allah Akbar before stabbing the officer in the neck. It was a sole attack, a lone wolf attack. At this time, we view him as a lone wolf attacker. We have no information to suggest any training, they said.
Here's my question. I do know that he came in through Lake Champlain, New York, and we've been up there, you know.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is, and there's just really one entryway or one checkpoint up there. The question I have, and I had talked to, okay, I guess it was yesterday, because I had talked to a federal source who said they are looking at where he was. He came in on the 16th of June, so that was a full 5 days before he actually committed the crime. And there are a number of questions. Number one, why Flint, Michigan Airport? All right. Why there? Of all the places, when you come in through Lake Champlain, why there? That's number one. Number two, what did he do, and who was he supported by, who was he associated with during the 5 days prior to his attempted murder at the airport. Also, I do have an authority that there have been arrests, or at least detentions, in Montreal, where he's from. And by the way, Bob Maggie, let me back up and thank you. Thank you, Bob Maggie. I didn't have this in front of me, and I really appreciate you sending this to me. Let me grab this. President Donald Trump did not say he did not, President Donald Trump did not say that there were no recordings. He simply said he did not record Comey in the story, which, again, you've got to understand the wording, and I think there's a lot of semantics and word games being played. Okay, so getting back to the Flint, Michigan case, and thank you, Bob and Maggie. Getting back to the Flint, Michigan case, there are a couple of detentions, is my understanding, outside of the family of this man, up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Now, and there's an ongoing investigation here in the States. And he was arrested for violence in a municipal airport. I think it's 18 U.S.C. 34. I'm not exactly sure of the statute. But, more charges will be filed, according to my federal source. And they will probably be either on the state level or concurrent with the federal charges or federal charges, but they will be more severe. So the information we have is that he acted alone. That doesn't mean didn't have help or didn't have some sort of guidance or support system mechanism in this country. But in terms of plans being found that perhaps, you know, he might go off or his compatriots there might be a wider plot in existence. Nothing was found to suggest that, just so you know. Now, this is the end of Ramadan, and of course, we all have to be careful. Watch this time when it comes to the Islamic terrorists, because this is the time that historically they have done things to.
Well, yeah, we still have a few days left in Ramadan, and I watched a Paul Joseph Watson video today. It's pretty good, the latest one from today. But he goes over the statistics of what has happened through this last Ramadan, and I think he said that if you listed each terror attack individually, it would fill 5 pages just for the last 27 days, over 1,300 dead worldwide during Islamic terrorist attacks during Ramadan this year.
Right.
I don't know how that stacks up to other years. Either way, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, regardless, yeah, it is ridiculous indeed. And don't forget, if you're joining us late, we will have video here at the bottom of the hour or very close to that, so just hang loose. Except if you're listening on Global Star BTR, then you're not going to have video, but if you're watching us live on YouTube. And if you're watching us live on YouTube or listening to this either way, do us a favor. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel and also follow us on social networking as well. It does help to raise our visibility as we attempt to get the truth out there. But we started out talking about the healthcare bill. We went through a number of other things, the recordings, and I think the punking of James Comey. The testimony, and I think that this is important too, and I'm going to mention this, and the testimony of Jay Johnson yesterday from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yep.
Okay.
That, we posted this on Hagman Report.
Yeah, of course, on Hagman Report. We're going to talk among ourselves here for a second. Okay, there we go. All right.
But yeah,
that's a very important testimony, I believe.
Yeah, and folks, go to HagmanReport.com, and you can see Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the interview, her accusing Jay Johnson of lying, and it's a pretty interesting piece there, and I'm going to pull it up right now. But it goes into his testimony about the DNC and the hacking of the DNC and them not turning over the information or the computer servers to the FBI. She went on to say that Johnson was flat out lying. Not even that he's, you know, misspeaking or misrepresenting himself or forgetting the details. She goes right to, well, he is absolutely lying. So Johnson said during the testimony on Wednesday in front of the House Intelligence Committee that the DNC refused the DHS's help with the Russian hacking and opted not to turn over their hacked servers. In an interview today on CNN, Wasserman Schultz accused them of being misinformed and said the DNC was never even made aware that their network had been compromised. He's wrong in every respect, Schultz said. No point during my tenure as the DNC was I contacted by the FBI, DHS, or any other government agency, or alerted or made aware that they believe the Russians, an enemy state, was intruding on our network. And there's much more.
This
if you watch the video.
Okay, that was the statement from Jay Johnson, correct?
That was Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Okay.
In response to Johnson saying that the DHS offered help with the hacking, but the DNC decided not to turn over their servers to the DHS or the FBI.
And Wasserman Schultz threw Jay Johnson under the bus saying, no, that's not the way it happened.
Right. He's wrong in every respect, she said.
But Comey testified. Comey made the statement.
Yep.
That he, had he known the extent, he would have, you know, beat down the door to something of that effect. And the CrowdStrike, the private security concern for the DNC is at the epicenter of all of this, as well as Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You've got to wonder what's on those servers. Let's wonder what's on those servers that Wasserman Schultz and others don't want other people to know. Well, who would possibly could have known that? Maybe an IT guy or IT person that worked for the DNC. Who do we know? Any names come to mind? Maybe Seth Rich?
The Sarnoff brothers?
Seth Rich and the Wan brothers?
The Wan brothers.
Sure. But gee whiz.
I mean, if you look
let's take this to its natural conclusion.
This goes without saying, but James Comey, if you review the testimony, if you go back to his announcement about basically clearing Hillary Clinton of any wrongdoing, his testimony about Huma Abedin, and then his most recent testimony after his firing, he was too busy making excuses and defending Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, defending the criminal use of classified information, justifying it away. Well, these people never really saw it. She didn't know what she was doing. There was no intent. They didn't read it. He was too busy giving Hillary Clinton legal excuses rather than actually worrying about what was on the server. He probably was told, don't worry about it, you know, it's under control. And he took his orders like a good boy and went on to defend them when they were clearly guilty of so much. But, it's so frustrating.
And don't forget, you've got the CrowdStrike's Russian hacks, okay? And then you've got the leaks, two different things. And they're different, there are different timelines. Now, one thing I will say, Lee Stranahan, who was at one point working for Breitbart, regardless of what you think of Stranahan, it doesn't matter. He did put together something, and I think he had just posted a video to this effect as well. He mentioned the Russian hacks, Ukrainian military debacle plus Comey's cleanup. This was a article that he wrote back in March, I believe it was. It was December 2016. CrowdStrike published a report on Ukrainian artillery hacking. And Stranahan does a good job of kind of connecting some dots between the Ukrainian, at that time, president, and the Russia, or the so-called Russian hacking, election hacking, that is still overwhelming in the news cycle today. CrowdStrike and the DNC. And then, of course, you bring in Comey, and then now Jay Johnson and Wasserman Schultz, and you've got this big circular firing squad at one another. So this is obviously a narrative that cannot survive really any kind of in-depth scrutiny. And somebody's going to have to go to jail over this. That's just my personal view.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, but
that will ever see that.
But this does involve Ukraine as well. There's just so much to this. Again, if you're interested, you can get more from Lee Stranahan. Again, regardless of what you think of the guy, The investigative work product on this is pretty solid through today. And it's something that's not getting a lot of play, or it hasn't gotten a lot of play. So, but it's clear that it's absolutely 100% clear. And I don't know how many times people have to say this. There's absolutely nothing happened that changed any election results in 2016 by any Russian hacking. Did I say that correctly, properly? I mean, is that, how is it? I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
There's nothing that was done that affected the outcome of the 2016 presidential election, the run-up to this election, the primaries, or the various parties whatsoever by any outside country, including but not limited to Russia.
Well, that doesn't matter. Don't let facts get in the way of the truth. I don't know how many people saw this on Drudge today. The Federal Elections Commission, one of the Democrats there, wants to widen the Russia probe to Facebook, Drudge, and foreign companies to expand the federal government's probe into alleged Russian interference on internet sites that take political ads like Facebook or Drudge Report. Many say the FCC that this is an unprecedented role, and some say this oversteps its authority. Well, it absolutely does. Folks, we are up against a break. When we come back, we are going to be joined by Inspector Bill Miker. He was on maybe about a month, 6 weeks ago. We're going to be getting into a number of things, looking at some current events and other things like money laundering. And it's going to be part two of what we started 6 weeks ago. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perata's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
see us. So don't worry about that. You're going to see us. Then when we're not on camera, that is. So. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. There we are. There we are on video. See? Told you we'd be back up. Thank you, Eric the Tech, for working so hard to bring us up and to keep us up.
I wouldn't leave you hanging.
Anyway.
Come on.
See, now he's mic'd up. See? Now he's got a voice.
Well, I'm going to talk all night.
Okay. Well, hey, bring us in, brother. Come on. Now, it's good to be with each and every one of you. Thanks for your belief and your trust in us as we take a look at, we delve deep into certain, on certain days we get deep into subjects. And this is one of those days. We had Inspector Bill Miker on, as Joe said, about a month or 6 weeks ago. And I'm going to kick it to you, Joe, just because I can. How's
yeah,
that?
Inspector Bill Miker on again maybe 6 weeks ago. We were talking about a number of things pertaining to his investigations into criminal organizations, whether it be drug running, drug trafficking, any other criminal organizations that involved money laundering, even to banks and governments. And he talked about his investigations and some of the roadblocks he run into and some of the problems with how the authorities go about investigating these financial crimes. Mr. Bill Miker, welcome back to the show.
Good to have you. Thanks for having me back.
Boy, you look like an inspector. You do. I mean, look at that, folks. If you're watching on YouTube, take a look at that. A dapper man indeed. I know it would be a bad day if you came into my office flashing credentials and saying I need to talk to you. I know that would be a bad day. I'm kidding, of course. You know, I remember the old joke. You know, it's going to be a bad day when 60 Minutes crew you go to your office and see a six. Never mind. Inspector Bill Miker is on with us. Let's start about the professional kleptocracy that rules the world. I mean, what are we looking at here in the bigger sense? We're looking at money. Just as an inspector, you follow the money, and it's all about the money, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, people can throw all sorts of window dressing on everything, but invariably, the people who make the decisions, the money and the power will come back to them. So endpoint to endpoint, there are endpoints to everything. It's a matter of getting to that stage. And as I had said last time on your program, I believe, just to rephrase a bit, the world's really broken down into three categories of people, at least based on my experience. And again, they include the 0.1% who probably control 80% of the world's wealth and power and influence, maybe more. Then there's the 1% of the professional class, which is the lawyers, the accountants, the bankers, the corporate investigators, the risk people, people like you and I. You know, we service those people, and we make a good living, and we want to stay in that 1%, which has a big range in it. And then you already have the rest of humanity, which is about 98.9% who are just out there, and they are cannon fodder for the 1% and the 0.1%. You know, not to get off the topic too much, but you know, I use critical thinking in what I do. You know, that's why I'm alive today, and that's why I've had the success I've had, at least in dealing with getting evidence on bad guys and getting inside their organizations. And, you know, again, I look at why does some of these uber wealthy people, this 0.1%, why are they so aggressively demanding the legalization of drugs? You know, drugs aren't dangerous because they're illegal. They're illegal because they're dangerous. So what would motivate somebody like a George Soros, who's very much an advocate for the decriminalization of all drugs? Listen, if I'm on the top of my 70th floor penthouse, you think that I want all that massive humanity down there paying attention to what I'm doing up here and living the high life while they're down there on the street looking for cigarette butts? No, I'm quite happy to keep you focused on your simple little needs, so I'm allowed to move unfettered to do what I do, which is to create more wealth and power for myself. That is the world today.
It absolutely is. And, you know, whether it's money or whatever it is, these people, the money is just one aspect of the control. It's a mechanism that they use to control things. But you're right, the elite at the top, and whether it's through our political parties, we've seen this divide and conquer strategy, and they've been genius at their ability to, I guess the best way to say it is, make people angry at each other while they are able to continue to function and siphon the wealth out. If the people would focus their anger at those, if we would come together and put all the other differences, political, economic, class differences aside, and worked to bring them to justice, things would go much smoother. But they actually work and they do their best work at dividing us, so that never happens.
Well, you know, again, just all my own observations. I believe that, you know, human beings haven't changed in terms of their core characteristics. You know, everybody gets sad, happy, jealous, ego, all of those things. And typically in my undercover career, I always focused on what they call agents of influence. And I focus on three. Three was always what I had to look at. I'm looking for, when I'm meeting a target, is it ego, is it power, or is it greed? Which one of those agents of influence do I need to facilitate or project to you, the target, that satisfies one of those three criteria? And that was the secret of my success when I had to do what's called a cold approach into the targets. Now, obviously, I had some background surveillance, psychological profile sometimes on people. So you had a little bit of preemptive knowledge of how to deal with them. But it still came down to those three basic triggers of influence. And I think one of the fallacies in the world, and it's totally taken root in the United States and in Canada, in our Western democracies. Listen, everybody is on this planet deserves equal opportunity. No question about that. The problem is not all human beings are created equal. Some are smarter, some are taller, some are stronger, some are, you know, thinner. We have too many characteristics, and we're trying to create this one basket can fit all, and it's creating disasters everywhere. Bad guys take advantage of that. They are not, you know, bad guys are probably, in my experience, a lot of them are chauvinistic, misogynistic. As a policeman, I can tell you that probably 95% of the people I arrested were male. In dealing with cartels, dealing with terrorist type individuals, I was always dealing with men. And yet we're trying to create this notion that the guys who, or the people that are combating all this, can come from everybody. Hey, you want to be a policeman? God bless you. Even though you don't have the skill set, we don't want to be accused of not giving you the opportunity to live your dream. The only problem with that is who pays the price when somebody's living their dream but are utterly incompetent.
Well, that's well said, and many people don't really. It's gone too far in the PC realm, and to the expense and to the detriment of everyone else. Very well said. All right, you set the stage pretty well. Let's get into some, if you don't mind. Let's get into some specifics now. I'd like to address the international work and. We can go anywhere that you start, anywhere where you'd like. But should we start, let's say, at the larger International War Crimes Tribunal with respect to, can we start there? Or would you prefer to start somewhere else?
Sure. I mean, we tend to think that the problems in our world are unique to our own countries, you know, and it's not. It again, human beings tend to have the same sort of strengths and weaknesses everywhere, and you know, I actually had dealings, you know, at the end of the Second World War. Adolf Hitler was the greatest war criminal in Europe. It took several decades before somebody else by the name of Milosevic in the Balkans was identified as the most heinous European-based war criminal because of his atrocities and the things that he did. Going back, as you recall, once that Balkan conflict came to a cessation, Milosevic disappeared. and the War Crimes Tribunal out of The Hague, you know, came together to say, this man's a war criminal. We need to deal with him. He's the most evil guy since Hitler in Europe. As it happened, I was brought in because one of Milosevic's three main money launderers had been recruited by somebody I'd worked with. But he wasn't a money laundering guy, so I was brought in to debrief this individual. Sorry, I'm just going to water my mouth.
And this is, go ahead.
So I won't say where I met him at, but so I go in and I go in and I remember I very vividly, where, you know, where we met, and I shake hands, and the first thing he says to me is, what is your religion? I said, well, I'm Roman Catholic. He says, you are my enemy. And I started laughing. I said, well, I'm not your enemy, but he says, I am Orthodox, where I come from. You know, you'd be my enemy. And anyways, he went on then to describe how, you know, they had laundered about $800 million for Milosevic, which funded the war effort, paid for the soldiers, paid for weapons, and started telling us that there was two other guys, and one of the three, we knew that Milosevic was sending out hit squads to locate these three guys, because they had all the evidence on his war crimes and how he funded it, etc. So one of the three had been found killed. So this guy is what motivated him to come into to our people. And the third guy, who was really the brains of it, is a Russian Jew named Petrovsky. And he was the main brains. And he disappeared into South America. I know where, but I just don't want to say it right now. And so this fellow was telling us about how, from their point of view, a lot of what was happening in the Balkans was a proxy war. They were getting support from Israel. A lot of the Islamic funding was coming out of Syria, primarily a lot of drugs from the Bekaa Valley. And to a large extent, they were fighting the dirty war, as bad as it was in the Balkans, in South Africa. A lot of things took place there. So he was getting granular, giving us the details, spoke about how they were laundering their money through Italian companies, and some well-known Italian companies, to facilitate the money payments. And so we're taking all this. And I always remember, again, an aside, the fellow said, look, I also took $6 million, which is sort of my money now. And he looked at me straight in the eye. He says, I help you, but if I lose my money, I kill you. You understand? I kill you.
Okay.
And so I just, you know, what do you say? I just started laughing. I said, don't worry. I'm not interested in your money. I'm interested in getting evidence so we can convict, you know, this war criminal. And so we notify the War Crimes Tribunal in Europe, dealing with the assigned investigator to this. I said, listen, we know we got two of the three. We have one with us now, and we know where the other one is. We're prepared to fly down to meet with him. He's agreed that he would meet with us. And so we said, look, do you have questions that you want answered? And they said, no, you can't go down. You know, we have to go down. I have to go down. And this war crimes investigator, by coincidence, was Italian. I don't know if that had anything to do with how they laundered their money through a lot of Italian corporations, but they refused to cooperate with us. They refused to say, okay, we give you our blessing to go down. We're not even going to give you questions. If we can't interview them, nobody is. And at that point, you know, even our own bosses in Ottawa, they said, well, if they don't want them, why are we spending our money for you guys to go down there to interview this? So again, the whole world goes in funny places, and then yet, you know, the governments spend how many millions of dollars for once Milosevic is caught, for all his legal team. They always have money for the lawyers, but they don't have the money for the people who are finding out the real truth of things. And you know,
that's
it reminds
point,
me.
By the way, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think that's an important point that people need to kind of keep in the back of their heads. And we're talking about the larger picture here. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. It goes back to what I keep saying earlier. It's about critical thinking. You know, connect the dots. Just because somebody says something or just because a position is expounded, there's usually something underneath that. And you know, Voltaire, the, you know, 400 years ago, you know, 300-400 years ago, Voltaire, the French writer, you know, I love this quote. He says, if you want to know who controls you, look at who you are not allowed to criticize. And just think of that. 400 years ago, he was recognizing the power of certain individuals and institutions to protect themselves. And you look across your own lives here. In the last 20, 30 years, who are people most worried about criticizing in the United States? You know, they're not worried about criticizing criminals.
Right.
But you get to certain, you know, certain levels of power and influence. And, you know, back in 2000 or 2001, I audited the FBI undercover program on behalf of the Canadian program, just, you know, get best practices and
sure.
see how the difference and what we can learn. So, you know, the FBI are terrific to me. I got nothing but praise for how I was personally treated. But I learned something that I've never forgotten when I did that audit. And that was this. Up until 1971, the FBI never had an undercover program. And as a result of the Weathermen, you know, against the Vietnam War blowing things up, the FBI for the first time formed the beginning of their undercover program. So that was in 1971.
Inspector, let me just really drive this point home. So until 1971, until the advent of the, or infiltration of the Weather Underground, you're saying that the FBI never had undercover agents, never insinuated undercover agents in any operation?
I don't know. They might have done things, individually. But as a program, the program didn't begin until 1971.
Okay.
Part of the reason is J. Edgar Hoover found it distasteful, you know, kind of that old school way of policing, oh, trickery or whatever the notion might have been. But he himself was not a huge proponent through much of his tenure. And again, strength of personality can affect things. But here's what happens, and it's, I don't know why people don't wake up and see this, because it's in front of your face. So 1971 with the Weathermen. Now let's fast forward only 8 years, a mere 8 years, 9 years, when you had the Abscam investigation. I don't know if you're familiar with Abscam.
Very, very familiar. Yep.
So just for your audience, you know, Abscam was, you know, the FBI became aware of corruption involving elected officials and unelected officials, but they were focused on, you know, senators, congressmen, both at the state and the federal level. And so they had undercover FBI agents who pretended to be Arabic. They were rich Arab sheikhs, and they were offering money, basically secret commissions and bribes, to have influence. And so those arrests took place, and that came down. And what happened the following year? Congress, I don't know if the number is still this today, but what happened? Congress said, who's watching us? The FBI. So they instituted a oversight that any FBI undercover project that had a budget that exceeded $250,000 would be reported to Congress, or at least have congressional oversight. Talk about a made in heaven way to know if you or your buddies are under investigation. I mean, I look at that and I look at what is going on in America today. And again, like I say, you as Voltaire said, you want to know who controls you. You know, look at who you're not allowed to criticize.
Exactly. And for the listeners and viewers, I just want to just drive this home. Abscam, it would be short for Arab scam, I believe, in kind of a convoluted sort of way. But it was a 2-year operation, actually, that more than 30 political figures were investigated, and among those, a total of 7 congressmen, 6 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, and 1 U.S. senator were convicted. Not only were there members of Congress, folks, but also 1 member of the New York or New Jersey State Senate, members of the Philadelphia City Council, mayor of Camden, New Jersey, and an inspector for the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. And we did have Who was our guest, Joe, for Joe Pistone, I believe it was, that was involved in the sting operation, as well as Serpico, but Joe Pistone we had on, who went undercover as Donnie Brasco.
Yeah, I've met Joe a couple times. He's a good man.
Yeah, and of course, that was this allegedly, now I'm not sure if, I believe that was the same boat that was referenced in the movie, that they used the same boat, Abscam. But nonetheless, I'm going off on a tangent here, but very interesting indeed. But I think it's important from a context point of view to, for people, especially young people, to really kind of understand the Abscam and how significant that was back in 79, 80, 81, in that time period, I believe it was.
Yeah, no, and again, you know, history repeats itself. You know, those in power, the only way they maintain their power is to maintain their control of the messaging. And that's why media and social media is so powerful. And for a great period of time, you know, until social media got as pervasive as it is, now people can start to unlayer the onion and are getting their eyes open more and more, hopefully, to, you know, what's behind some of the messaging that's going out there. But there was a certain point in time that if Walter Cronkite said this is what it is, people took it as gospel. There was a sense of institutional, you know, solidness there. But that no longer exists. And again, I think that's, you know, people, I've been asked, Bill, why you go on the Hagman Report? And one of the reasons that I do is I actually believe independent media channels is the only way that people can get out there and have their voice heard, have their concerns heard. Because, you know, again, I look at that Abscam and I saw what happened after they did a brilliant job of dealing with corruption. They got a big thumb put on top of them. That's a big red flag. And I think if you look out over the last several decades, that thumb has become more insidious. It's become even more oppressive. And I think America is still deals with its dirty baggage in a more open way than most countries. And again, it's not unique to the United States. Canada has the same issues. Certainly, Britain does, and others. But I keep coming back to the need for people not to believe what they're told or what they hear, and use critical thinking. And that's, again, I don't want to go too off tangent, but I look at an education system that's all about indoctrination. You're not teaching, you know, the critical pathways in life. It's certainly not in the Western democracies because we're concerned about all these other touchy-feely things. The problem is predators and bad guys, they love it. They absolutely love what we're doing to our society because it's making the low-lying fruit even fatter and sweeter, and they're taking advantage.
Man, you said it all. And they do want to just drive home, and Joe, you can pop in after this, that as you had indicated in some notes that I have in front of me, critical thinking is lost and is not a factor in how young people are educated. And it amazes me to how many people can watch a video, for example, that maybe some guy made in his father's basement about some issue and get thousands upon thousands of views and subscribers, and it's just ridiculous. And people just, they leave their critical thinking skills, if they had any to begin with, you know, before they turn on the computer, apparently. I don't know. Go ahead, Joe.
No, and Mr. Miker, you said a whole lot. And to go back to some of what you said with the media, it's like a bad relationship. The media has lost all trust and respect from the American people, and they have done nothing to try to repair that trust. So they're going to continue to decline as far as people listening to them. But unfortunately, there are, you know, as you said, a lot of people out there who have been through the indoctrination through the school systems, and they continue that pattern even when they're adults and listen to things and get indoctrinated things like the media is telling them. And, you know, one thing that really bothers me about the educational system and politics involvement in it is that when you look at, there's countless numbers of examples where you can look at 100 years ago, people taking, professors or teachers taking tests from 100 years ago from, you know, sixth grade through 12th grade and giving it to kids now, even in college, they can't even, you know, get 50% of the answers right. And that tells me that, you know, the educational system has not grown. They're not, you know, continuing to, even if 100 years ago, you know, 8th grade students were smarter than 12th grade students are today, what does that say about progress, especially in the educational system? And then the indoctrination part, where it's not teaching, as you said, it is basically being told how to think. And these people are not being given critical thinking skills. And without that, you know, their brains are, and I think we've all been through that. You know, when people say that they've been awoken to the reality or the truth of the matter, that's the deprogramming of the critical thinking skills. And I got a book here that I started reading a while back that I'm going to continue reading, start again. It's called Brainwashing, the Science of Thought Control. And this is really what's going on in our country on a massive scale from all aspects. And you know, go back to Edward Bernays in the beginning of advertising and using manipulative tactics on human nature. They have created this into a science, and they have almost perfected it. But again, many people are breaking out of that mold and are becoming part of the independent media and are becoming engaged and continue to help others to get out of that same destructive cycle. Folks, we're talking with Inspector Bill Miker. He will be our guest.
What a treat it is to have him, Joe.
Yeah, we got a lot of ground to cover, and it's going to be a great conversation. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere.